Namaste. A warm welcome to all of you to the Awaken Talks. Good morning, good evening to all of you who are joining us from across the world. My name is Drishti and I am really delighted to be moderating today's Awaken Talk. Welcome again and thank you for joining us. The purpose of these talks is to share stories that nurture our own inner transformation and help plant seeds for a more compassionate society. We do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life who inspire us to live in a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls, there is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allow all of us to hold this kind of space. Today, our special guest speaker is Preeti Srinivasan. So thank you everyone for joining this today's call. To begin our call, let us start with a minute of silence to anchor ourselves into the space and the present moment. Thank you and welcome back. Before we begin, just a note for everyone that's listening in, the format of this 90 minutes conversation will be a moderated conversation with our lovely speaker, Preeti, for next 1 hour. In our last part of the call, we will invite questions from anyone who would like to ask. So at any time during the call, you can submit a comment or a question via the webcast form on our live stream page. You can also email it to us at ask@theratesurvicespace.org. That is ask@theratesurvicespace.org. And I just want to add that we are operating with the usual constraints of technology. So in case the connection drops or there is any other glitches, we will try our best to be back soon. But thank you for your understanding in advance. With that, I would like to hand over the stage to our moderator for the day, Arun Srikumar, to lead us into the conversation with Preeti Srinivasan. Arun is a very dear friend, and what I love about him is his passion for inclusions for persons with disability. Arun is working with SAP since more than 15 years now, and with the big heart that Arun has, along with SAP, he is the core team member of Indian Inclusion Summit. Without taking more time, I would like to pass over the mic to Arun to lead us into a conversation with Preeti. So over to you, Arun.
Thank you, Drishti. Am I audible? Fantastic. Thank you for the kind introduction, Drishti. It's always a pleasure to work with the volunteers from Service Space. And today it's my absolute privilege and honor to introduce our guest, the lovely Preeti Srinivasan. Preeti likes to call herself a cripple who's a whole, and she is an epitome of grit and grace, aptly titled for today's talk. A national level swimmer, and a youngest member of the state level cricket team, and an excellent student, Preeti suffered a spinal cord injury at the age of 18, which left her paralyzed below the neck. She is the founder of Soul Free, a public charitable trust working to improve the quality of lives of people with disabilities, especially the ones with spinal cord injuries. She is an award-winning disability activist, a writer, an inspirational speaker, painter, and a true agent of change. Dear Preeti, welcome to Awaken Talks.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Arun. It's truly a pleasure to be here. I'm so grateful to Service Place for giving me this opportunity, and I'm sure we're going to have a lovely time.
Absolutely. I have to thank you from the bottom of my heart, because I know that you're not at the pink of your health. So once again, thank you so much for making time, putting in the efforts and being here with all of us. I'm sure that the next one and a half hours is going to be truly rewarding for everybody who's going to listen to us. To start with our conversation, I wanted to touch base on something that I believe is one of the most important things in everybody's life, which I call it the defining moments. These are pivotal instances in one's life from which life changes completely. Your journey from being a rising star, both in academics and in the sports field, to battling against all odds as a quadriplegic, and even going beyond oneself, providing support and inspiration to the disability community through SoulFree. I'm sure you would have had your share of defining moments. Would you like to share some of it at least with all of us today?
Oh yes, it'll be a pleasure to do that. Actually, I'm almost thinking of narrating it in such a way that you can almost close your eyes and visualize it like a movie. So in this way, I feel that in hindsight, one can see the absolute amazing way the cosmic flow has made things happen and how beautiful it is, because I can see it in hindsight now. So I would like you to just imagine an 8-year-old who has been taught all her life that once she has bath, she should go into the puja room for a couple of minutes, do whatever she wants to do at that time, and then start the day, whether it's going to school, whether it's cricket, swimming, whatever it is. Once you have your bath, you just go into the puja room and do whatever you want to do. And somehow that particular 8-year-old never thought of asking for, "Ooh, I have an exam, I better ace it, or I must do well, or get the gold medal," or never anything like that. So this girl, when she went into the puja room, she was playful and everything, but the one thing that repeated itself was this real, I could actually see it like a blackboard type thing with debits and credits, and it getting wiped out. Actually, I would physically wipe them out every day. So it was like the dream of the 8-year-old, the only true recurring desire of the being, not an 8-year-old, but the being, was that I should become a blank slate.
Wow.
All the past samskaras, vasanas of previous lifetimes, the pluses, the plus, everything is done, and you're left with the same blank slate that started everything, you know. So that was the desire. But then as life happens around us, you know, the parents would say, go to school, do well, wherever you go, you get involved in that. And the whole life becomes about the external events and achievements, and all your time goes there. All your time goes. I mean, my day would start at 5:30, where I would go off to swim, come back, go to school from 7:30 to 2:33. And actually, my parents would many times come to school with a change of clothes and something to eat, so that from school itself, directly, I would go for swimming practice, come back at around 7:30, and then do my homework and be in bed. So I didn't have much of a, you know, much free time even at that stage in my life. So everything was jam-packed. So in that, you can't really think of this blank slate or what that means or going inward or anything like that. And it continued like that till I was 18, because, I mean, things always get more busy, not less, right? So I had so much on my plate. We were traveling. We were doing so many things. So I don't really believe that my life would have been about the core purpose or the core reason for the beingness had it not been for the accident. So the accident was definitely a moment in my life that made a lot of things be different, because I lost my sense of identity. Suddenly my whole life before that had been about this body and what I was able to achieve with this body, and then nothing meant anything. In a split second, everything was gone. All the, you know, medals or whatever it may have been, all that didn't mean anything. And suddenly people looked at me as if I was something pitiful, something either that people didn't want to even make eye contact with me. And it was very painful. So from that moment on, this going inward into self-inquiry and finding out, who am I then? If I'm not any of those things I have you know, worked so hard to achieve in the first 18 years, then who am I? So that was a point. And then that whole spiritual journey that brought us to Tiruvannamalai, a couple of life-death experiences, my father's passing away, my mother having to go through bypass surgery. So it all brought in, came after that. But that whole thing about the shift between what was going on in the external world and the concentration on that, and that being shifted through God's incredible grace to just bestow me with this blessing so that I could actually fulfill the desire of this lifetime, which is to become a blank slate. So now I'm right on track. I'm right exactly where I need to be, doing exactly what I want to be doing. And that's the blessing, isn't it? When you know you're exactly in the right place. So I guess.
Absolutely. It is a matter of serendipity that I have to tell you this. 2 weeks back, I had the pleasure to be at the Lake Shrine in Los Angeles, which is founded by Sri Paramahamsa Yogananda. And I got the chance to meet the highest monk there. And in our conversations, one of my friends was asking that, why do you think that there are people who are born with disabilities? Why do you think that there is a kid who is probably 7 to 8 years who cannot speak? And most of the times our religious construct around this is that, oh, it's from the last janam, it's from the past karma. And one of the things that he told us, which really left me spellbound, was the fact that he said the soul chooses. It is not us, it is the soul which chooses. And remember the amount of karma that the kid who cannot speak will gather in this lifetime. I somehow connected the dots with the clean slate usage that you told. And all of a sudden, I'm like, wow, you know, you can always look back at instances and these defining moments in your life, and the dots will connect, but only in retrospection. So thank you so much. I wanted to jump into your work and your vision regarding Soul Free. So I know that you founded Soul Free in 2013, and it was always aimed at providing educational, medical, and employment-related support for people with disabilities. And I love the fact that you always told that Soul Free is about enabling them to live a life with dignity and purpose. Now, I learned that this year, now it's like after 8 years, an integrated spinal rehabilitation center is all set to open in Tiruvannamalai. Looking back at that journey, what are your thoughts and what do you see as the future for Soul Free?
Wow, that's a great question. From the beginning, I want to say that Soul Free is not mine.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the things that come through Soul Free, there is divine is working through this body, and this body's great blessing is that it's been a chosen instrument. So never once has there been any ambition, any sense of doership involved with Soul Free. And that's the great part about it, because the way it happened itself was beyond me. It came out of dire need. I mean, overnight, my father was 57. He had a heart attack one night. The next afternoon, he was not here anymore. You know, sometimes my father stopped working soon after my accident. I had my accident in 98. In 2000, we shifted to Tiruvannamalai and started living like ascetics, like many people do in Tiruvannamalai. So our needs were very, very minimal. And we were living on his whatever he had earned before and the savings we had. So sometimes, very rarely, I would strum up the courage and say, Appa, what's going on? What's going on with our finances, you know? And he would say, why are you concerned about that? You just be. you be happy. I'm here, I'll take care of everything, and I'll be the last one to go. And this man at 57, he was just gone. He didn't leave a will, he didn't leave any directions about how, what I should do. And I had basically not been involved in any adult decision making from my accident, which was already at 18. So even before that, I had never taken any decisions. And then suddenly my father was gone. 4 days later, my mother had a heart attack. And from there on, I was the decision maker of the household. And I didn't know anything. So I was totally lost, clueless, afraid. I mean, I was shit scared. Believe me, I didn't know where to begin. So from there, it was a very, very steep learning curve, because my mother had this condition called angina, where whenever she would do anything anything stressful, or she would physically be in strain, she would get chest pain. And even shifting me from the bed to the wheelchair, everything became so difficult, because we didn't know where to start. We didn't have caregivers. We were finding it difficult to even survive through the day. And from there, we reached a stage where my mother would need a quintuple. She had a quintuple bypass, a 7-hour surgery. And at that point, I didn't know how I was going to survive. And those 7 hours were some of the most difficult moments of my life, because I was told it would be a 5-hour surgery, and from that 5-hour, 1 minute till that 2 hours that it took extra, I was dying every second, because I didn't know how to live without her. Even today, physically, she is nearing 70. She has not slept for 8 hours continuously, because she needs to shift me in bed so that every few hours, so that I don't develop bed sores. So literally everything, from the food I eat to getting dressed, everything happens only because she's there. My parents basically gave up their lives. They sacrificed their lives of comfort, their whatever gave them joy. They gave everything up so that I may live with dignity. And that's perhaps the greatest blessing I have received in this life, this gift they have given me, because it never occurred to them that, we can continue with our lifestyle and go on with our lives, and we can put her in some home somewhere. They never even thought like that. They never blamed me for the accident. They never said, look, you've not just destroyed your life, you've destroyed ours as well. Never once did I receive that blame, which is one thing I have seen in the people with spinal cord injury. They are blamed for it. Yeah. They're told that, look, you've become a shame and a burden on us, a curse on us. So while my mother went through the surgery, my father's friends came up to me and said, how are you going to live if there comes a time when your family is not around to help you? And that was a million-dollar question, because, I mean, even till today, it scares me, because I don't know. I don't have any answers. I don't have any security. I don't have any support system in India, because there are no long-term rehabilitation facilities for a person in my condition at all. India is perhaps 1/5 of the world's population, out of which 43% is the woman's vote. And should a woman in India become paralyzed due to any reason, become a quadriplegic or a paraplegic, there's no place to go. So that's where my mother said, you be the change. I have faith in you. And I said, Ma, what is wrong with you? I'm not even able to take care of myself. What am I going to take care of others? And I don't know anything about the law. I don't know anything about running an organization. I don't know anything. Moment my mind sees numbers, it shuts down. And in India, it's the people who do things the right way who get into trouble.
Absolutely.
So I'm not going to start anything. So then what happened? She had her bypass surgery. And with the grace of God, she got better fast. We came back to Tiruvannamalai in a 3-month period of time. And I came to know that in those 3 months, two paraplegic girls I knew had been forced to commit suicide by their own families. They were told, "You are a shame on us. You're a burden. The entire family is being ostracized. Nobody is willing to marry your brother because they are too afraid that they may be saddled, burdened with your care if they marry the brother." So poison was left next to them and they said, "Enough is enough. You can go." Imagine when the family does that to you. They drank it and they died. I felt I had been slapped in the face because I had been afraid to fail. But now I felt if I didn't do something, I would be part of the problem, not part of the change. I felt I needed to raise my voice, that people needed to know that this is happening. And that's where Soul Free was born. I felt that for those of us whose body doesn't cooperate, while the soul is always free, it's in that body and it's limited. As long as it's in that body, it's limited to the body. And if every day you're told you don't deserve to live, something dies in us every day. So to set the souls free, to give them a chance to live with dignity, to give them a chance to fulfill their dreams and desires, that's where Soul Free was born. And today, yes, we are supporting more than 1,000 families of those who are living below the line of poverty, who are struggling with paralysis without any support system. When they leave the hospital, they're basically told, "That's it. Nothing can be done for you." And in India, let me tell you, the numbers are much higher than we think. Yes. A spinal cord injury is said to happen every 38 minutes, more than 18,000 cases in the U.S. every year, and 250,000 quadriplegics alive in the U.S. today. In a country the size of Ireland, which is half the population of Tamil Nadu, more than 3 injuries every week. But in India, we don't even have the luxury of being a statistic because we don't know how many are happening every year. We don't know what happens to them once they leave the hospital because nothing is happening. And many of them, especially the higher level injuries where the hand functioning is also impaired, many of them don't last even the first year. So whatever we are doing through these outreach programs, whether we are providing financial support, whether we are providing mobility aids in like wheelchairs and hospital beds and scooters and stuff, whatever we do, it's not enough, because the basic thing they need is retraining. We need to re-engineer their sense of identity. We need to give them faith that they can continue in this body, because this body is not diseased. Spinal cord injury is not a disease. It's a stable condition. And if you can get retrained into how to live and work in this new body, there's nothing you can't do, really. So for that, the Inspire Center is coming about. I've been really blessed because the government of Tamil Nadu has supported us, and we are now going to almost ready. In the next 1 month or so, we are ready to launch the Soul Free Inspire Center, which is possibly India's first integrated spinal rehabilitation center. And we are going to be able to transform these lives, to teach them how to live and work in this new body. And I feel really, it's a miracle, because how can this broken body do something like that? It's like a huge project. And it really can't happen without the love, the support, the care from so many people. And that's what Soul Free is all about. And I feel that we are also hoping, what's the future about? We're hoping to start a Shambhala village. We're calling it the Shambhala, Soul Free Shambhala village, where people can come and live there. And at no point will a person with spinal cord injury be forced to commit suicide. That's the bottom line.
Wow.
So they can live out their lives and work there and stay there for as long as they are around without the fear of being abandoned.
Fantastic. So humbling, Preeti, so humbling. I mean, your narration already gave me all the visuals. Probably that's what you wanted, but you know, there are only seldom cases where the moderator is struggling to find words to kind of reciprocate, because when you feel that energy with so much of depth, it really hits you at different levels. I have to tell you something which is very close to my heart. One of the main reasons why the India Inclusion Summit was started has a connect to this caretaker's dilemma, if I have to put it that way. When we started off raising our own awareness of how the disability community in India is challenged and what are the problems that they face, one of the heart-wrenching instances was where a mother actually told us that, Firoz and Arun, I want to live one more day than my son. Now, in our lives, I don't think there is any pain which can come in terms of a mother seeing their little ones, you know, pass away. And here is this mother who's praying that I want to live for one more day than my little one. And that's where we also said, hey, it is not about all the challenges that we have. As you rightly said, there are a lot of things that are missing in the system. There are a lot of things which we don't have answers for. But let's do what we can do. Let's spread the ripple of kindness. Let's spread the ripple of support so that people can do what they can. So congrats on the Integrated Spinal Rehab Center. I hope it goes well. And I love the word Shambhala. It's Buddhist, right? So I hope that also happens very soon. But I want to take a step back, and probably I was just remembering the first time we met. If my memory serves right, it was 2014, and we met each other in the sacred space of India Inclusion Summit. And I fondly remember that your views on inclusion was always broad. It was never, never limited to inclusion of people with intellectual or physical disability. You actually went beyond the community of disabled. You actually wanted to generalize inclusion. I was super curious to understand your thoughts behind that, because most of the times when we engage with people on a day-to-day basis about inclusion and disability, most of the times it is inclusion which is very clearly connected with the community of disabled. You went beyond that in 2014 itself. So would you like to share what are your thoughts behind that, let's say, philosophy of inclusion for all?
Absolutely. I believe that the only difference between me and a so-called normal person is that their bodies are currently cooperating with them and mine doesn't. I always start many talks saying, do you know how many muscles it takes to move one step forward? It takes around 200 muscles working in unison to take one step forward. So this amazing machine we have been given. But at any stage, we start off life being disabled. For the first 4 years of our lives, we don't even have bowel or bladder control.
Yes.
And we eventually go back to that. And today, you're wearing glasses, Arun. Do you feel you're disabled?
Yes, I do. Because without the glasses, I can't read much.
Exactly. So even 16-year-olds, when I ask them that, they get offended. They're like, what? No, I'm not disabled. And I say, oh yeah, take your glasses off. You know, so everybody is more or less disabled, or they're going to be, or they used to be. So what is this whole ego about, that I'm normal and you're not? at any stage. I mean, we always speak about Senator Harkin here. I've been also very, very inspired by his story, because he once started off telling me that his younger brother has an auditory impairment. So he was working in a bakery, and somebody came up to him and gave him a note saying, "Are you happy working here?" And he said, "No, I'm bored." So the person said, "Do you like working with machines?" And he said, "Yes." So this person took him to a factory where he had all these machines. These machines are so loud that people with normal hearing, as it were, had to wear all these noise cancellation devices and things, where they could hardly be there even for an hour. They had to go out, and you know, it really takes a toll on you if you can hear, because that sound is so loud and overpowering. But this guy, he was so bindas there, because he didn't need anything. He was able to work perfectly well. And so in that particular environment, who is the person with disability?
Yep.
The person who can hear. So your circumstance, the physical scenario of where you are, many times decides whether the impairment or lack of impairment you have causes a disabling condition or not. So it is not the impairment that is causing disability, it is the social conditions where nothing is accessible to you. You're not able to go to school, you're not able to go to college, you're not able to go to the swimming pool, you can't watch a movie in the theater, because the environment doesn't suit your impairment. So it becomes the environment's problem, that the environment is not universally accessible, and not that you have an impairment. So I feel that disability itself is a matter of conjecture. It's a matter of perspective. So anybody at a given position, if suddenly you're not speaking English here now, it mm-hmm. becomes a problem, because you're not able to understand. So you need somebody who can either translate for you or give you subtitles or something. So it's the same issue that a person with an auditory impairment may have. So I believe that basically there's no such thing called disability, because all of us are disabled in that case. So that's why Soul Free's tagline has always been positively abled. And I feel it is a universal tagline, because all of us have positive abilities and all of us have weaknesses.
Absolutely.
So in that case, it becomes a universal label that we can all carry with pride, saying I'm positively able.
With you on that. Brilliant.
Thank you.
So it is so interesting that there was this very famous interview which was done with one of the most celebrated disability rights activists here in the US. Her name is Judith Hyman, and she was in the Trevor Noah show. And it's during the conversation, Trevor makes this comment that, oh, with reference to the able-bodied people like us, right? I mean, it's the equivalent of the normal. And Judith retorted, which is now historic. She said, "You know what? I don't like the term." Then Trevor is like, "Why?" And Judith says, "You're not abled. You're non-disabled." And you are having a high likelihood of acquiring a disability, temporary or permanently. And statistically, that is very high. Now, this is exactly what you told me moments ago, that whether you like it or not, we are all waiting in queue. And at some point in our lives, we are going to we will have a situation where we will have a face-to-face encounter with some disability or the other. So to call yourself able or normal is probably not the right way to look at it. And again, it's so interesting to see that you already connected that at years ago, and you have been really championing the cause for a long, long time. I wanted to actually come back to a little bit of inner transformation, because Awaken Calls is all about spreading the message of inner transformation, probably, you know, looking inward as well. And for you, you are in Tiruvannamalai, the abode of Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi, and your spiritual strength has been your true inner light. And in fact, I was amazed by the simplicity with which you coined your 4P, the letter P philosophy, which is about perspective, purpose, present moment, awareness, and peace. It sounds super simple, but the depth of what you're trying to narrate is really, really heavy. Could you please share some light on your learnings and, of course, your self-realization from the spiritual dimension?
Wow. words sometimes fail to fully capture what the process, because it's been a really long and you know, sometimes very difficult process for me. Because when we one of the greatest blessings of my life, I feel, is that both sets of my family have had very, very strong spiritual lineage. We've had a guru, and we have found how all these gurus are, you know, very, very nicely interconnected in each other. So a lot of miracles that way. And what brought us to Tiruvannamalai itself, Tiruvannamalai being such a giant magnet for all the great gurus over a period of time, I feel it's one of the blessings, biggest blessings of my life. And I don't want to be anywhere else in the world. So it's a very, very special place. And many times I tell people, you know, this place only pretends to be on earth. Time travels differently here. It's a parallel realm, and it's something that you can't explain with words. You can only experience its absolute magnificence, I would say. And to be in this space, I feel, is a very big blessing. When I moved to Tiruvannamalai, I was 20 years old, and I was a brat in a sense, because I felt a sense of entitlement. I felt that I worked hard in my life, and for everything I achieved with that, it was hard earned and it was deserved. And then I was suddenly in a body which couldn't move anything. I couldn't move a little finger. So where did the question of deserving anything come about? So now what? When I was feeling angry at the world, when I was feeling sorry for myself, it was my father who became my guru. He said, okay, this is not easy. I understand. It's very difficult for you, but it's the body. And everybody's body is going to go. So what are you basically grieving about? You know? So he said, why don't you look within and find that within you that can't be taken away? Why don't you think of this as a blessing, as a gift that you've been given on something on fast forward mode? And at 18, at 20, you can start your inner life. And that, at that point, I was still angry. You know, when he would read from Ramana Maharshi or Nisargadatta Maharaj, the great saints, I would say, why are you reading this to me? Is this going to take my pain away? Is this going to get me up and walking? No. So I don't want this stuff. But somewhere, somehow, those seeds were sown in me. But I still had a lot of fear.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fear. I had the fear of abandonment. I always had this fear that if my parents were not around to protect me, what would happen? And being the visual person I am, I told you about how I could visualize becoming a blank state. My fear was that people would carry me and throw me into the forest. and forcibly take my thumbprint, and then what would I do? Then I had a couple of near-death experiences, and I had an out-of-body experience, and I could actually see my body in that forest. And there was no fear, there was peace, there was joy. Because if that happens, that means whatever lesson I've come here for is almost done. And when you can face your deepest fear, the thing that scares you shitless, and you can smile at it and say that, yes, I'm okay with this. I'll go through this. It's not so hard. When you have gone through this body's death process, mm-hmm. you realize, hey, it's not so hard. It's just for half a minute or so, then the body takes its own course. It won't let you suffer beyond a certain point. So when you've gone through that, when you come through the other side and you say, whatever this life has to throw at me, it's not so hard. Because I have faith that the Master is protecting me, that I can surrender in His will and He will take care of me much better than I can take care of myself. Then suddenly, you're breathing free. And in this body becoming so-called imprisoned, they say, they always say, confined to a wheelchair. I don't understand what that means. The wheelchair doesn't confine me. The wheelchair actually sets me free. It makes me mobile. It allows me to go around and be my own person. So when that happens, and then you see that being in a wheelchair has actually set me free of my illusions, then you're free. Then you're soul free. So that's the spiritual process that's brought me where I am today. That I can laugh and be the happiest person in every room I can be in.
Wow. You made it sound super easy. It's so heavy that probably the next question that I have should be on a lighter note. I'm sure about this. But thank you. I think only blessed beings get into instances where the real purpose behind why you're here is mostly, you know, shown, and then life takes a completely different path. I'm sure that all the gurus and the masters and all the blessings from your near ones are always protecting you, and through you, a lot of people are actually getting touched, which is such a good thing to happen in anyone's life. Well, on a lighter note, you said that, you know, your support system, especially your dad and your mom, they were really, really the biggest blessings that you can have, that you could have ever asked for. And in fact, I had seen one of your interviews where your mother comes and says, with so much of joy, that, you know what, Preeti's condition, never take it as a form of punishment. It is actually a blessing in disguise. Now, when I heard that coming from a mother, it actually gave me a little bit of insights on who she is as well, spiritually, or, you know, her understanding of life. But I'm sure that there'll be this, you know, lighter instances or stories, which is between you and your mother. Do you want to give us a small sneak peek into how it is?
Sure, absolutely. Just one thing about that, the four P's, I want to say that,
please.
I feel this is really my biggest blessing, because that ability to change that perspective, to find that present, because the present moment is all I've got. I don't know if I've got another second. So that's when I think over all those, you know, it's suddenly you're being turned into this instrument.
Yeah.
And once that instrument is ready, it's given that greater purpose. It's great, given that purpose to serve the greater good. And from there, there's only peace and joy. That much is for sure. So from when you know, when I speak about this so-called, I seem to be an adult, or I seem to be somebody who people can, you know, look at and be inspired by, my mother will say, oh God, I heard your talk and I slept, because again and again I'm hearing the same thing. And they should come and see you when you're being a brat, you know, when she's feeding me and I'm saying, oh, you've given me too big a mouthful or too small a mouthful or something, all your complaints, somebody should be here and listen to you. And then they will know that, you know, you're still only 4 years old. So we keep fighting and we have all these. But the thing is, I don't have to say something and she already knows what I'm thinking. And we have this amazing, my mother is my goddess. Without her, without my parents have been the greatest influence in my life. They are my guru because they showed me, they didn't preach to me, they showed me how to be there. They're karma yogis. My mother, she's a Tamil poet and she's a great artist and she has a great creative spirit. And she never complains. So it's from them. I mean, whoever I am today, I'm still not even 10% of my parents. And I'm really blessed to come out of their union. And maybe this is still not light enough, but one is, I mean, how can we deserve being born to these kind of parents who will do this for you? So I'm whoever I am, I'm just kind of the dust at their feet, and I'm blessed to be that.
I think everybody who's listening to this particular segment, I'm sure they all would be remembering their parents. And I think it is such a humble thing that we all should keep in mind, that without them we are no ones, right? And of course, as you said, it's the same with, I think, almost all the mothers, that you conquer the world and then say, you know, I'm this and that. And I remember my mom saying that, you know, people should see you when you're cranky. So yeah. I totally relate to what you're saying.
And another thing on a lighter note I would like to add is I'm a total foodie. For people in my condition, weight is always a concern. So I would also like to say that my mother is one of the best cooks in the world. And the thing is, she turns these really healthy things into delicious food. So that's another thing we share.
Wow. I think, yeah, and that's also so important, because whenever, you know, I go to my mother's place in a week, I'll invariably put on 2 to 3 kgs. I think, yeah, it is important that all mothers should look at turning those tasty recipes into healthy ones as well. So in that way, you are super blessed. Amazing. I wanted to switch back to the core reason of why Soul Free was born. And it is about society's attitude towards disability and inclusion. I mean, it is a good thing if you really look at it. Over the years, it has been progressively changing towards the better. But there is still a long, long way to go, right? Preeti, how do you evaluate the situation? You have seen that for over almost 15 years or so. How do you evaluate that situation? And what would be your wish and message to everyone who is going to view this conversation at some point in time?
Well, in terms of disability, I feel that India is on the right track. I mean, we are definitely much behind other so-called, you know, Western countries, and we are as a third world country, but I think we are on the right track. Mm-hmm. Because when I started in 2002 or so, when my father went to various colleges to seek admission for me, I wanted to do psychology. We were basically told there are 15 days of practical classes. There are no lifts, no ramps. Don't join. Why do people like you bother to come to study? You know, from that position where we started fighting, saying, I mean, I was in the top 2% of the American student population, and I'm not able to get into a long distance learning program in India. And why? Just the fact that I'm in a wheelchair? It's atrocious. But I think we've come a long way from there. And in my own story, things have changed to the extent that today I'm able to say that I'm a senior research scholar doing my PhD at IIT Madras, which is one of the world's most reputed institutions. So things are changing, things will change. And, you know, I feel, I can tell you, you know, on a lighter note, that sometimes I feel like a battering ram. You know, I go break my head against something, the barrier is broken, but I hope that the people who are coming behind can come in much more easily and freely. So things are changing, things will change, but still on an individual level, it will be a battle. Maybe that's all right. Maybe that's all right. Maybe it's time we raise our voices. And, you know, many times for the many of our beneficiaries, I'll tell you two stories, one very difficult and painful one, and one story of victory, because many times I'm very hard on them. I don't give them, they can't play the self-pity card with me. I'll start with the success story. His name is Pusari. He's a paraplegic, but a higher level paraplegic. His upper body was very strong. He came to us for a monthly stipend of 1,000 rupees a month. And I said, well, Pusari, what is it you do during the day? So he said, I live in a village. At the center of the village, there is a very big tree. And all of us sit around in that tree and under that tree, and we talk. And I come back in the afternoon. I live in a hut. In the afternoon, it becomes cool. So I come and lie down. I said, you sit around and you talk and then you lie down. Then what do you do for a living? How do you eat? And he said, well, actually, my mother goes into the forest and whatever she earns is what from. And I said, my God, you're sending your elderly mother to work and you're eating from that. And that's okay with you? And he said, well, I don't know what to do. I said, you've come here seeking help from me. I don't even have my hands. Your hands are fine. Tell me what you can do. He said, the only thing I can do is farming. I said, then do that. We will help you. We will provide the seed funding to help you start. So he started the first year. We helped him lease 1 acre of land. And within the first year, he had sown more than 100 sacks of rice and earned more than 1 lakh rupees. And today we have made 1 acre into 3 acres, and he is now an employer of around 10 people. So this is what we can do. We can transform their lives from where they are seeking help, where they feel they are disabled and they can't do something, to now becoming employers and becoming financially and otherwise self-reliant. This is the word for inspire, that we want to make people physically, financially, emotionally, and in every way self-reliant, so they can get reintegrated into mainstream society and become respected members of society. So this is the change we can give.
And the second story?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I forgot. This was a very challenging one for me, because it also made us feel really helpless. This fellow's name is Manivel. He he's actually a lower level injury. I tell the story because this guy, if he gets the kind of rehab we want to give through Inspire, he should be completely self-reliant. He's got a lower level injury that had he been given rehab immediately after he came out of hospital, he should be walking with calipers. But now he's in bed and he's in a position where his mother was not feeling too great. So she made something, they had lunch, and then he seems to have kind of passed out. He gets up in the evening. He finds his mother on the floor. He doesn't know what to do. He takes a photo from his phone and sends it to us saying, "My mother's lying on the floor. I don't know what to do." There's nobody nearby who's willing to help them. So we call sources in the government and send them medical support. Mm-hmm. We find that they have been sort of had food poisoning because the mother was already unwell and the food she made, a lizard had fallen into it. Okay. So he's in that kind of helpless condition where he's not able to get a drink of water or nobody's there to even empty his urine bag or anything like that because his mother is not conscious.
Mm.
That was, I started crying when I saw his mother's lying on the floor and he doesn't know what to do, that kind of helplessness. Now we are supporting him. And if he gets, now almost 6 months later, his mother actually passed away. And he's in a position where there's nobody to support him. We're able to support him financially a little bit and, get him some help through the government sources. For example, the COVID has been extremely difficult.
Oh, yes.
With many of their parents, others also, many of their parents were day laborers and without any income, they struggled. So we started a quarantine monthly stipend because during the quarantine months, we were able to support them. Through the government, we were able to send them grains. And many of them who had pressure sores and other conditions, complications caused by spinal cord injury, they were not getting, they were not permitted to be hospitalized. So many actually did pass away because we couldn't do anything. So that is how where we feel that the Inspire Center, if the government can actually help us in the rehabilitation process and include rehabilitation under the insurance, it will change so much because rehabilitation for whatever reason is not part of insurance in India. So if that comes about, there can be, I've been talking to the government. I went up to the chief minister and I said, please invest in making us alive instead of stopping us from dying later on. Because the government, actually, if you need surgery for bed sore and all that, the government will spend on that. But it's not spending on teaching you how not to get a bed sore in the first place. So these are a lot of things are changing. They will change. They'll get better, but not fast enough for, the numbers are very high in India because everything that happens in India, so many people are involved. So we need much more to happen, especially in the northeastern countries, places like Jammu and Kashmir. Nothing is there. And we need to get there. And we hope that, things are changing. We'll get there. We just need to get that whole systems. The systems need to come in place. Once that happens, we'll be better off.
Absolutely. I think that is our common vision. A lot of us who are doing our tiny bits of making this a dream, our entire wish is that the systems comes to our aid, to our support, so that it is more holistic in nature. we are towards the end of our time. Of course, we will have more questions that's coming from the audience. Before that, Preeti, I wanted to ask you if there is one key takeaway, one key message that our audience should keep in mind after listening to our conversation, what would it be?
Well, for me, I would say live fearlessly, because fear is just a figment of our imagination. For me, the greatest learning I've learned is that life is not about all the things I cannot do. There are always obstacles. There are always seeming difficulties. But let's concentrate on what we can do. And what we choose to do with what we can do and the impact we can create for the greater good. That's what I would like anybody to take away from this. But there's one more thing that I would like to say, because at some point after my accident, I really felt I wasn't worthy of love. That, you know, that whole thing that somehow you're not good enough anymore. Many of us carry that for various reasons. And we also are very judgmental on others we feel aren't good enough. So I want to say that let's really try to understand that we can't love a person because they deserve it.
Mm.
How are we to say who deserves what? So let's love others, not because they deserve it, but because we deserve to have love in our hearts. That was the biggest change for me. That I learned to love myself, because not because I deserve it, because I deserve to have that love in my heart.
That's what really who we all are. It takes different levels of maturity to realize that angle. Such a joy. Oh, Preeti, thank you so much. We need more battering rams like you, like Feroz, like Nipun, you know, tirelessly striving to make a difference in the world. And it's been such an honor, such a pleasure. I think we'll open up for questions now, and I'll hand it over to Drishti.
Thank you, Arun and Preeti. It's been quite a conversation, right, from inclusion to your parents, to your spiritual journey, to your near-death experiences. And I just feel there is so much more to your life and so much that we can really explore. And I just feel that 1 hour is really short, you know, our time with a person like you. And so we will move on to the questions that are coming in from audience. But before that, I just wanted to request the listeners that if you have any questions for Preeti, then you can submit it via our live stream page. And you can also email it to us at ask@theratespace.org, or that is ask@theratespace.org. So Preeti, till the time new questions come in, I want to ask you a few, presence a few questions from the audience. There is one question from Vinod from Bangalore. He's asking, when did you completely and unquestionably when do you completely and unquestionably surrender? When did you accept and embrace the change? And I think you mentioned in your talk there was this one phrase, why me? And you gradually shifted to why not me? And you know, everything is a blessing. So what kind of brought that surrender to you is what I think is our first question.
Thank you so much, Vinod from Bangalore. Thank you for asking this lovely question. It's a very, very gradual process. So you don't actually, you can't actually pinpoint a moment when you say, at this point I was in why me and then I went to why not me. But I can tell for my second life-death experience, near-death experience was really powerful, because somehow my lungs, I have this spasticity where my legs kick about uncontrollably, and they're very strong because it causes like 100% contraction in the muscles. And that particular day, somehow that contraction went into the lungs. So it became like my lungs were stuck together. Like sometimes, you know, they create a vacuum like that, you know, like when there's a plastic bag and the more you try to blow into it, the more stuck it becomes. So I could actually feel myself dying. The more I tried to breathe, the tighter my lungs were becoming. So I told my mother, Ma, I'm dying. And she was like panicking. She was shouting out Guru's name and all that. And suddenly, you know, everything became very clear for me. And the thing I said was, I surrender in the will of my master. And then I lost consciousness. But when I came back after that, I had been actually gone for 8 minutes. My body had turned cold. And scientifically, it said that for more than 30 seconds, if your body doesn't get oxygen, it starts to die and the brain starts to dry. So the fact that after 8 minutes, it seems that most of my brain cells are still intact, it's a miracle. And that's the truth. In that moment, I have surrendered to my master. And for me, there's no more fear. Because whatever I go through, I know that I'm taken care of.
Thank you. I think that's the heart of warrior that you have. And with that, we'll move to next question. The next question is, where do you find your balance between being a warrior and transcending your disability? That is, doing great things despite of the disability versus learning into and being okay with the impermanence, being okay with being insignificant. Even if I may not be disabled, I think I or so many of us often struggle with this within us of wanting to be extraordinary, either physically or in career or in spirituality, at many subtle levels, and of being okay with our own ordinariness and significance. So where do you kind of find that balance between all these things is our next question.
Well, that's it's actually a complex question and an interesting one. So normal and disabled and extraordinary and ordinary, I think that's where the question is arising out of. Nobody has ever called me ordinary. Never has my life ever had anything to do with being ordinary. So it's always been out there, whether I was starting swimming when I was 3 or playing for the senior team when I was 8. So ordinary has not been a label that has been attached to me at all. So in fact, I'm quite proud that, you know, there's nothing ordinary or nothing about my life. And I don't believe in this concept of disabled, because see, I know a lot of people who get a headache and then the rest of their day, they're not able to be productive. And, you know, a part of me is, see, even now, I think you can see there is a difference in the color of this part of my, because it's sweating, it's become dark. And this side is lighter because that's the natural color. So my body is right now in a place where it's just becoming like ice. But I'm perfectly functional. So what is it that disables people? I don't even know. So I don't feel I'm disabled. So these labels we carry, see, the insignificance of a being is that we're all like little specks of sand, little bubbles in an ocean. The bubble comes up, it thinks it's a separate, you know, something on its own. And then it goes back to what it has always been. So in that sense, we are insignificant and we are here for a temporary period of time and we are going to go back to that which we actually are. We are going to awaken from our sleep and this dream is going to be over. But in that sense, apart from that, we are eternal beings, right? We are insignificant and we are the most significant that is happening. We are disabled and we are not disabled. We are ordinary and we are absolutely extraordinary. We are all these things at the same time. So the balance, it happens on its own, right? We don't have to create balance here. It's already in balance. We just have to accept that it is what it is and, you know, that we can be what we are here and now. And it's only the labels. The labels are being put by somebody else. They can balance it out. I don't need to balance anything. I'm already in balance.
Interesting. And what's more interesting is that you say that in some ways we are all the time everything. We are maybe disabled, not disabled. We are all at the same time everything.
These are just labels that are attached on us, and we don't have to attach these labels to ourselves.
Yeah,
we can be free.
So with that, I would like to go to our next question, which says that how has your relationship to joy and gratitude evolved in your time from your childhood when you were so successful, then the tough phases, and then even today when there are a lot of challenges at personal and work level. But there is also recognition and respect. So how has your relationship with joy and gratitude evolved over the time?
Oh, yes. It's been an amazing journey. I always tell people in these two decades, in this quadriplegic body, I've probably grown more than I could have in 20 lifetimes in a normal body. Because this is just more challenging every day, every moment. It's just constantly teaching you that you are not the doer. You can't even move your thumb. You can't even move your little finger. So constantly there is joy. Constantly there is gratitude. Constantly there is a flow of this blessing that you can see everywhere. Like I said, for the first 18 years of my life, a lot of good things happened, a lot of success happened, and I worked hard for it. So I felt I deserved it. But only after the accident happened, I could say that where is the question of deserving anything? It's all a blessing, right? Mm-hmm. When things happen, so-called that you enjoy them, then you think of it as a blessing. If it happens in a difficult way and you fail, then you think of it as a punishment. That's just everything that comes to you to teach you something, to help you evolve, to take you to the next phase of the journey. So, mm-hmm. So if we see that in that way, everything, every lesson. See, there are so many ways my ego is broken down every day because of the so-called dependence I face, right? Mm. So every day I'm taught, no. If seemingly things are happening well, they're happening well because it's God's grace. It's not you. You can't do anything. Mm. And the less of you there is, many times the better the work gets done. So when we start to be more in alignment with the cosmic flow, then the work happens more effortlessly. So in that sense, the less of I, the less of the ego there is to block the view, the more the journey becomes more of a 360 degree, and you learn a lot more. That way. Yeah. And in that sense, the joy, the blessing is continuously there with me now.
I am sometimes very speechless with Preeti, how you respond to certain phrases. So there is this one phrase that, so Vinod had asked one question, the first question that he presents, and he has kind of written back saying that you are helping us to see and shift from disabled to dislabeled.
Fantastic. Yeah, I was talking to Rohit the other day, and you know, he was writing about something, and I wrote that all we need to do is generate the eyesight, not EYE sight, but the eyesight to look beyond what we can see.
Yeah.
So he said that was a cool one.
To look beyond your ego, as you were saying initially. Look beyond our own egos. Right. There is one more comment from Swapan. It's just a comment where it says, Buddha taught to be the master of your own. With that mastery, one can achieve his or her own goals. There's a lot to learn from life of Miss Preeti.
Thank you.
So one more last question that I wanted to touch upon was, we usually keep hearing, or there's this one phrase which says, everyone is good at something, and everyone can do something that is great, or everyone can also be great at giving. Like, how have your journey kind of, you know, shifted to that, to kind of really giving back to the society, and from that whole thing where initially you thought that, you know, why I should be in this position, first of all, to kind of shift to this whole thing where I can be the change myself. So can you touch base a little more upon that? Like, how can, so the question is, what are your thoughts on everyone can be good at something, and everyone can be good at giving.
Yeah, so I have always loved Albert Einstein, I think, who said that, you know, if you judge a fish on how it climbs a tree, it will always be a failure. Yeah. So if we are a fish, we should be a fish, you know. Yeah. I have one of the things that, you know, Arun said, in terms of inclusion, I have always felt that we should celebrate how our individuality, how nobody can be, nobody can be a good drishti other than drishti, right? So we are perfect, and we are the best at being ourselves. So I don't believe that we should be carbon copies of anybody else. So we should always be, and children, I think it's great parenting when children are being allowed, permitted to be themselves, because children have their own individuality, and they should not be put into certain boxes and say, you know, you can only do this. And many children being told which careers they should take, and I'm like, why? They should go after their passion. They should be themselves. We should celebrate. You've made this beautiful child. Now celebrate them being themselves, right? So I have always been the person who I had a father who was like that, who would say that, you know, even if you decide to be a mechanic, I will support you, but just do it with so much passion that you be the world's best mechanic, kind of thing. So that is what I feel, that, you know, we are perfect in being ourselves. So why can't we just be ourselves? So in that sense, that we can be the best at who we are, and in that sense, that's good enough. And in giving, in terms of, see, the one thing I have learned is, in seemingly doing things for others, it gives me more than it gives anybody else anything. So I don't believe that I am generous or I'm selfless or any bullshit like that. I do more for myself by forgetting that it's by realizing how much we are able to give in the world that we realize we have any value, right? I feel that way. I feel I do more for myself when I do things for that, for others, and it's actually not selfless or anything. It's the way I find to grow. It's the way I fulfill my own sense of who I am. So in that sense, see, in a lot of forums, I tell people, be self-centered. Be self-centered. In that sense, I mean being centered in the self. When we are centered in the self, then it's beautiful. It's all a celebration. And that's, I mean, if you're happy, then it's hard that you're grinning and everybody else is frowning. Only when, if I'm smiling, everybody is smiling with me, right? So it's the best that way.
Drishti, the construction behind this idea of giving is heavily centered on money. But think about it. You do everything that you have to do to amass money. And after you're 60 or 65, and when you know that, okay, you know, life has nothing much to offer afterwards, I start giving back. I want to turn the construction of the narration in a different way. Giving is not just money. Giving is time. I personally know how much time the volunteers from Service Space puts in to program the show. Isn't that giving? Giving can be intellect. When somebody comes to you and say that, you know, I am in a particular situation, what would you want me to do? You are giving your intellect when you're trying to solve their problem. Giving is touch. When you see somebody and give a kind hug, that's also giving. And if there are anybody who wants to be a giver, there is no shortcuts to it. And there is no, let's say, one way to give. It has to be a daily affair. It has to be a way of life. And practice small things. Be kind to the person who you meet in the store or standing in a line. I still remember there was this instance where I met Nipun, which was in Berkeley. And he said, oh, Arun, I'll get you an ice cream. Of course, there was one more person with us. And I was like, okay. I mean, and then we went to the ice cream shop. And there's this lady who was standing before us. And she's in the queue. And she was buying some ice creams. And when she was about to pay, Nipun goes and says, hey, you know what? Please allow me to do the payment. Now imagine breathing for you, visualize this happening. And all of a sudden, oh my God, which country am I in? What is happening? Is this guy trying to do something else? Because we are so far away from receiving kindness, right? Without an intent tied to it. And then she said, no, I mean, please let me pay. And Nipun is like, you know, I have to say that he is very cutely persistent. That, oh, you know what, please let me pay. And then she says, you know, why do you want to do that? And he says with a big smile that I want to do it because I met my friend after a long, long time. Isn't that giving? So please understand that if you choose to be a giver, there are so many, so many venues every day you will encounter where you can give your talent, where you can give your time, where you can give your touch. And of course, if you have money, please share it to others as well. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. It's kind of what Martin Luther King says, everyone can be great at giving because everyone can do something. I just wanted to present one last comment for you, Preeti. Jaya says, you are so inspiring, Preeti. I am so glad I got to listen to this Awakened talk of yours. God bless you. So with that, Preeti, I just wanted to invite you if you have any final closing thoughts before we actually close our call. We would really love to listen to that.
Well, I just want to thank all of you, all the volunteers who've been part of this, Rohit. I want to thank Venkatramani uncle, who actually connected with Nippon and made this happen. And Nishaji and Arun and Drishti and all of you for giving me this wonderful opportunity. Nipunji, the next time you're in Thiruvannamalai, please give me the blessing of being your host. I would love to be in your presence for a while. So I just want to thank everybody who's been listening to us for the last, I mean, really, see, this is time travel for me, because it's been how long? It feels like 3 minutes to me. So this is love, this is blessing, and I'm really thankful for being in this, this is satsang, right? So in this sanctified space and time, I'm really, really thankful. And if any of you would like to support Soul Free in any of its activities, please log on to our website. It's soulfree.org. And whenever you are, if you find yourself in the south of India, please think of making Thiruvannamalai one of your places to be. And you can come and spend time with our residents, just making eye contact with them, playing a game of chess, you know, singing or doing anything with them. We will find ourselves really blessed to be in your presence. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for everything.
Thank you, Preeti. And just one last thing, how can Service Space support your vision? It's what we would like to know.
Oh, well, why don't you bring as many volunteers as possible to come to Soul Free so that we can have some talks from here as well. So from Thiruvannamalai, we can be your base here in South India, and from here we can take it on and we can see how we can bring together the talents of all our beneficiaries and see what we can do with that. So really great.
Yeah. So thank you, Preeti. Thank you, Arun. Thank you for this amazing call. There were so many gems that you shared, Preeti, and maybe you, for you kind of, you know, in 16-20 years, you lived the 16-20 lifetimes, but I think for each one of us, it's going to take so many more lifetimes to kind of do so much of inner work that you have already been doing. And thank you for saying a big yes. Thank you to all the listeners. Before we close the call, as a closing comment, there is one comment from Neelam from California. I feel amazing experience of life being a blank, clean slate, Preeti. Listening and envisioning your journey is so humbling. Moved. Shambhala is such a good step forward. Disability is a perspective. You are such a champion. Your spiritual journey has so much learnings. Thiruvannamalai is the place. Being in a wheelchair has set me free. This is so amazing. All the blessings from Ramana Maharshi. Thank you for all the takeaways. Let's concentrate on what we can do. Let's love, because we deserve to love ourselves. Truly an honor being with you, Preeti. I surrender to the will of my master. Totally a miracle. Surrender to the master. Thank you for your experience. It's what how all of us feel right now. Thank you so much for all these gems, and thank you for everything.
Thank you.
With this, I just invite all of you and all our listeners to close, so that we can close the call with a minute of silence and in gratitude for who Preeti is and her journey and sending lots of prayer and love to Soul Free and everyone. And maybe everyone on this journey, I hope we all can set our souls free one day. So thank you. Thank you, everyone. We'll close with a minute of silence.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.